briefly, we met in 1999, I think it was, during like the summer one acts, or I don't know if I had done the improv class. I must have done the improv class before that summer's one acts.
Okay. I guess 2000, but then I was close.
And then it's funny, I never know the date to tell people when I started doing improv, because people like to do that a lot, like, oh, 20 years, 25 years, because I did 2 years of high school improv with Joe Harris.
That counts.
That, to me, that counts.
That's your boot camp right there.
So that's when we met, but how did you, when did you discover long form improvisation, or short form improvisation, I should say? Spolin, when did you discover this stuff?
1972.
No way.
No, I actually, even before that, 1970, a group called the Committee, San Francisco, came to perform at UC Riverside. And I went and watched them all three nights to perform, because I went to the first night and I just, my jaw was dropping. I go, how do they do this? They say they're making it up. They couldn't possibly be making it. And you go, and they are. And it was funny, and it was wild. And then in 72 was my first semester quarter in graduate school. And the teacher said, all the directors have to do a performance in some sort of alternative theater. And, you know, this was when the living theater was around, the open theater, all these people taking off their clothes and doing weird crap. And, but I'd seen improv. So I said, I think I want to do that. He says, okay, you got 10 weeks. And so we took Spolin, and literally, I got a group of undergraduates, and I'm looking at the things, and it says to do this, and then we get up, do it, we try it. Sometimes it worked. We go, hey, wow, that was great. Sometimes it wouldn't. And, you know, you go, I don't know why it didn't work. And then we did I think, six shows at the end of the quarter, and they were very well received. It was like, wow, this is fun stuff to do.
But like you, it was still very fringe, right? It was not a lot of, it wasn't, people didn't know about it, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, it had been around for 10 years. Spolin was 63 is when she wrote her book, and they were and Second City and The Compass before them were performing. But, no, we went and did some touring with this group after this, and all the way through the first days with you, you go in and you go, we're going to make up things as we go along. And people go, what? You know, how would you possibly do that? And we said, well, you're going to give us suggestions. And they'd still like it, looking with these blank faces. And of course, you go now, and everybody knows improv. Everybody knows. But yeah, it was very, I mean, that's one reason it was so exciting. It was still cutting edge time for improv. And you know, I didn't have a Second City too. I did see a Second City show in Wisconsin one time, a touring show but they did mostly sketches with one improv in each half of the show. While I was doing the rehearsals for the National Biscuit Company, that was my UCR group's name, I went into LA, and there was improv to be found, and it was fascinating stuff, because it wasn't just short form. It was the group called the I'll remember the name of it, but they did a first half of short form, and then the second half was all one big long form thing. So I never knew that there was a difference between short form and long form. And I still don't acknowledge that there is. There are just people that go, this is what we do. But I think it got Del Closed and and became a thing. So,
but you were also on track to like you were gonna teach and do quote unquote more legitimate acting and stuff, but this improv seemed to like spark you in a way that the other stuff didn't, or am I? I mean, I'm sorry, I got a dog
No,
barking in the
that's
background.
fair. That's fair. And I would I'd say two things. One, I would go, this is more fun than doing scripted theater. And scripted theater, you memorize the lines, you know what's going to happen, you know the cues, you know where all the laughs are, but and you should be more confident in this, but I was more confident before an improv show that it was going to be a great show and the audience was going to love it than I was before doing scripted shows. And yeah, I still did tons of scripted shows just because I, you know, even when I was teaching, I said, I can't be that acting teacher that just says, here's how to do it. I want to know from experience. And so I kept doing it. But there was just something you got from an improv show that was instead of getting to the point with a scripted show where I found it in an improv, you never found it. You were finding it anew every night, and you go, this is just the best thing ever.
And I mean, let's define found it. Is it the laughs? Is it the flow state? Is it all of the above? Because even sometimes when we're bombing, we're finding it. We're finding that fun within there. What do you think that, what did that, I know I'm being crazy here, but I'm just curious, just to dial in a little bit more.
And I've taught improv to a whole bunch of different people in weird situations as workshops for teachers and other things, in business-oriented situations. And I think the common denominator that everybody comes away with is I didn't know I had that in me. I didn't realize. I feel like I've plumbed the depths. It's almost like a really successful counseling session where you really get down to the grunty stuff underneath and you go, this is what's going on. And improv does that for people. It's like, wow, I have this in me and I didn't know. And you just could see these people from different walks of life just getting all excited about this new thing that they found to tap into some hidden or hitherto hidden resource.
I've also seen people kind of come unlocked, discover this feeling. They love it. They can't believe it. The rub has always been now putting that in front of an audience, where on the one hand, right, we can have those things in a corporate setting and the CEO is acting like a duck and he's like crying. And now does an audience want to watch that? And so that's when we get to shape shows and stuff.
It's hard, and you're right. It's like a different switch, and it's one reason in my classes I would always get them up, and do things that we called shows. You have to plan a show. You have to do it. The only audience is going to be the other people in the class, but of course you want to do well for them, but so you don't see it as another switch that you see it as part of what you're doing all the time. And then the audience doesn't get scary. The goal of that is so you don't even think that there's an audience. You're just doing it for yourselves. At the same time, all of your preparation has been that this is a show for them and that they're the whole reason that you're here. But I know myself, you get up there. And all of a sudden, it's there haven't been any laughs in a while, and you go, we need a laugh here really badly, or they're going to lose interest, and they're not going to ask us back. So.
I feel like that's still today my main, I don't know what the word is, where I'm most confused or not. Like, I feel like I know a lot about improv, but I'm still confused by the word comedy, I think. I'm still confused. I mean, when I was training with you, there was a large group of us that like stayed there for probably too long, so we all became very friendly. we loved improv. We loved you. We loved that college. We loved Cerritos College. We loved the studio theater. But as I think back, certain things started to stand out to me where it was like, well, our friend Dave Rathall, the truth is, you're not going to be funnier than him. And I was very happy to, I mean, I would have told anybody else that, right? And I don't know why I'm bringing that up specifically. Just like, I'm like, well, whatever I do, I'm not going to be as funny as that guy, which is totally fine. But I think it does mess with my wiring a little bit. So I'm like, well, what else then can I do? Or what specifically can Chris do that Dave can't? Or I don't know. It got confusing for me sometimes where I only have a question. It's just more of just rambling there.
But I mean,
yeah.
To me, the answer, and I wrestle with this all the time, but to me, the answer was in the don't try to be funny rule, that if you follow the process, and this is what people don't like about short form that I like about short form, is that the process, if you just do it, it's going to work for you. And you don't have to provide the funny, because as soon as you provide the funny, you're back in your head and it's not fun, because all you're pulling out of your head is things you've done before. And to get to the point that's so fulfilling in improv is that point when you go, oh shit, I don't know what to do next. I don't know what to say next. And I'm in trouble here. And then the next thing is where the laugh is, because that's how comedy works anyway. In a script, it's building up the tension to this point of bursting, and then kabam, there's your punchline. And in short form, all it is, people go, oh, that's just games, or that's just gimmicks. And I don't see it that way. I see it as a structure that's built to force you where you can only react. That's the only thing you can do. You cannot think your way through it. And then, bam, things happen and they're funny. And that's the business people and the teachers going, well, I can be funny. I didn't know I was funny. And right. Feeling really good about themselves. And
you're right about that moment. Somehow it gets convoluted, or I don't know what changes, but something happens along the way where you can't stand another teacher telling you don't be funny, because the funniest person in the room is getting put on teams, is booking things, is yeah. The hero. And but as all these years later, I'm starting to come back around to that idea again of those moments, like you said, that short form produces, you know, every 3 minutes, those moments of not knowing what to say next, not being able to think and just reacting, is where the beauty lies. It's just so annoying that it's so simple on the one hand, and yet so many people mess it up, myself included, for 20 years chasing it the other way. You know what I mean? Like it's
it's like it's a mystery.
Yeah.
It's just the mystery of improv, and it's to me, that's what makes it so fun. I do know from watching improv for 40 years, day in and day out, that certain people gravitate to certain roles. There are the Dave Rathalls that are just, they're going to be funny, whatever they say. But there are people that go, I can be a straight man. I can be the setup guy. And there are the Maribeth Mudges that go, I can go either way. You know, yeah. I can set you up, or if you're not there, if you're not Johnny on the spot, then I've got the thing to do that will get them to laugh. It's and then there are all sorts of roles in between that people gravitate to. So there's the teamwork. There's your working with your people for 9 or 10 years, where you go, I know what I can expect from this person, And if I set them up like this, they're going to pay it off like that. And so you don't have to worry about that. All that stuff is just then to me becomes completely reaction, just like on the basketball court.
Yeah, we did an episode about auditions, and we discussed how a lot of theaters, and some still do, would audition improvisers individually, not as teams, as that's kind of happening now, but individually. And what you're looking for is you're looking to put together that dream team of like, that's the character person. That's the person that's got a good eye for the technical parts of the show. And this one will keep it right on the rails and try to put together
There
that
you go.
team.
Yeah. And that makes perfect sense. You don't find out if they can work together at all, though. That's the trouble with that.
That is the trouble.
Maybe that's the callback. I don't know.
I had no intention of making improv my life. And it was the best thing I had ever done. It was the most fun I was ever having. And I think because of the vulnerability of improvisation, the bonds that are formed in a class or on a team are kind of like heightened, you know, because we're like, we acted like idiots in front of each other, or we bombed in front of each other, or we won. But there, so I spent, I always say 6 years, but I don't know, 5, 6 years at Cerritos College doing mainly improv and some plays, but mainly improv. And then there was one day, and we've talked about this a little bit. It's kind of like lore in my mind, but you said I should go to Chicago, Second City. You said those words. I never had even heard of them. I didn't know there, I mean, this is embarrassing. I didn't know there was one in Hollywood, Kevin. I might have just went down the street.
Didn't know there was a city named Chicago.
Why did you tell me to do that? It changed the rest of my life.
Because it would change the rest of your life, because that's what I thought, because you needed to play with the big boys. As much fun as we had over the years doing improv at Cerritos College, it's a pretty small puddle, and you needed to get out there in the ocean and meet some bigger fish. And I, sorry, I'm mixing all my metaphors here.
I get it.
The glass is only half empty.
I mean, that was wild. You said it. You suggested I do that. I was at the time, I don't know how I ended up there, but I was doing a play in Anaheim, and this woman in the cast said, "What are you going to do after this?" And I just said, "Oh, I'd like to go to Chicago, Second City." And then her parents had that place that I ended up living in.
That's right. Oh, I forgot about that.
So,
Yeah.
like, you know, I have dinner.
Oprah Winfrey lived there or something like that, right?
Yeah, and like, well, this is my favorite story is, her parents, I meet them for dinner. They're very sweet. They say, "Yeah, you can have the place as long as you want. You know, it's we go in there only occasionally." Okay. I'd never been there before. And when I hadn't barely even been in a taxi cab. So there's a taxi cab at the airport, and I looked at my notebook and I said, 505 North Lakeshore Drive. And he goes, "Sosa's place?" I didn't know what that meant. I had no idea.
Wow.
And then we pulled up to
I assume that was Sammy
that
Sosa.
was Sammy Sosa.
That's funny. Sammy.
And then everything changed from there for the best, for the best. You know, I mean, you, I don't know, like it was just you and my dad were the only like men in my life. And my dad, God bless him, you know, he didn't know anything about any of this stuff. You know, he's just a immigrant laborer, but trusted me to make the decisions I wanted to make. So it was really helpful to have somebody like you. And furthermore, Kevin, you helped a million students all the time, constantly. It's not me. I have my great story. Anybody who I talk to, who's ever interacted with you as a student, you affected them constantly. And I feel like, I don't know, I can't emphasize this point enough that it's so incredible. It never looked like you were doing it though, Kevin. You didn't I don't know how to, you weren't like, oh, this like priest or whatever. You're just doing your thing. And I don't know, it's conversations in your office. It's moments during a break at a rehearsal. It's running show. It's so, in there, you just start to affect all these people. But again, it never looked like you were doing it. Did you know that was happening?
No, not really. You know, if I had a feeling, it was that I wasn't doing enough, you know, that I should be doing more. And you know, I kept looking for more things to do. I think it was that way all along. You go, what would I feel like if I were a student? I would want these people to help me. And a lot of times professors are just never there, and or they're very remote people. And I just, you know, the people who wanted the help, I wanted to help them. There were tons of people that didn't want the help and didn't need the help, maybe. So that's all. I just wanted to be the kind of teacher that helped people. And it does surprise me to hear you say this, because I have been retired 10 years now, and most of those 10 years I think about all the things I didn't do. And that where I lacked, and you go through moments on stage or things you directed or people that you taught and you said something. I mean, you guys remember, you guys come to me and go, you said this, Mama, and I would rarely remember saying that. Yes. But there are plenty of things I do remember saying that I go, gosh, why did I do that? Why did I say that? So I don't know if that's a human thing or that's a me thing, I'd sure like to have that monologue back in Romeo and Juliet. Sure. Watched up that kind of stuff.
Could you tell that some of us needed some help? Just for a little context, for who knows where this is going to land, Kevin, who knows? But just the school we're referring to is Cerritos College, which is a community college in Norwalk, California. Norwalk and the surrounding cities, not, I don't know how to describe them specifically, but not a great place. There's some crime, there's some gangs, there's some grit. It's not complete, you know, it's not that bad, but it's a little rough. And myself, along with a lot of my friends who were students there, you know, lower class income, like not a lot of money, not a lot of means. I was living with my dad in a one bedroom apartment when I first met you. So yeah, just kind of not a great situation around there. I never felt ever like you were like pitying us or anything, and I don't think you did, but now I feel like I was such a kid then, and now I'm an adult and I see my own students. Could you see from just your age and your position that it was kind of bad for some of us?
You mean your off-campus situations? Is that what?
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I always, not always, I often felt bad about what lives and situations you guys came from. And I remember before Cerritos, I taught at Tulane, rich kid school, Denison, rich kid school. But the 28 years I was at Cerritos meant more to me than any of the places that I was before, because I felt like those guys, they didn't really need me. They just needed somebody to get them through. It could have been anybody, but I felt like so many of you guys really needed a program and teachers that cared. And I felt like I made more of a difference at Cerritos than I met anywhere else, than made anywhere else that I taught. You know, when you think of community college, who goes there? most of the people that go there couldn't go to a state college or a state university now, or a university of, certainly couldn't go to Denison or Tulane. And they haven't had success in high school, and they're looking around for something. And so many of them found theater and go, wow, this might be the something that I was looking for. And so it felt like I was doing some good there.
Do you think maybe sometimes you were too involved? Like, do you think, like, I know, so you spent a lot of hours at that school. I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I just,
No, I know. I think I know what you
yeah.
mean. Did I tell you I just wrote out my theater stories? They wound up being like a memoir. But my friend John R. Whitson said you should write down all the stories you've told us over the years and we're sick of. But write them for your grandkids because they'll want to know what you were. So I did, and it's like this 300-page thing that got way out of hand. But I talk about that yeah, I felt like bottom line, I wasn't at home enough, that I neglected home. And if I had it to do over again, A, I would move closer to where I worked, instead of spending 3 hours on the freeway a day. And B, spend more time at home. Because now your kids are there, and you have the relationship that you have, and I don't have a bad relationship with my kids, but watching my grandkids grow up, I go, wow, that this is such a vital, important time that I needed to be. I got the balance wrong. Anyway, I mentioned the stories because I talked about it a lot. Of what regrets that I had, so.
It's and obviously those regrets are valid. It's just so just wildly ironic that, like, if you go back and change it to the way you think you should, quote unquote, do things, where I then we don't get the help. And I'm not saying to choose us over your family. I'm just saying it's interesting that way.
But yeah, and I thought of you students as my other kids. I mean, I really did. And of course, the other thing is you don't know that it would have been any better. I have friends who spent all sorts of time with their kids. They lavished attention on, took them everywhere. They were always with their kids, and now the kids are grown up and don't want anything to do with them. And it's just completely scary to me. And I feel fortunate that my kids seem to like to see me. They go out of their way to call me. We have and so I feel real lucky there. I mean, actually an inordinate number of friends who have been just shut off completely by their kid, and I know how much attention they lavish. So no guarantees that if it'd been the other way, that things would have been any different. So.
You know what I think? Thank you for sharing that, by the way. You know what I think ruined me is that you had mentioned these people were kind of lost, these students, and we find theater. We go, oh, this is fun. This could be it. It never ends up being more fun than that moment. Never in my professional life has it ever been more exciting than backstage before a Molière play. Or, it's one line or two lines on a TV show that nobody gives a shit about you. And, you're in and out, you're in a crummy little trailer. You lose all that, all those, why, what I thought it was going to be, which is hours of rehearsal and character exploration, that goes away. I mean, I guess if you're a movie star, you get to spend time with bigger roles, but it's interesting.
I think it's mainly the difference between theater and camera work, and how they're set up. You do theater and you feel like you're in the war with these people, you know, that they're your buddies, and all those stories you read of you wouldn't do anything to lose the esteem of your buddies, and I got your back, and this kind of, and you feel like there's a bond that will never go away. And never. I mean, I wound up doing a lot of camera work and commercials and stuff like that. And not only did I not have that, but I never met anybody that I cared to see again after it was all done. The agents I have are totally scary people, and I realized, okay, that's probably good, but still, you know, I have this cozy little relationship with your agent where you call them up and you know, how are things? Whereas theater, I think you got to do more theater. I mean, you do, you perform live, you do
Yeah,
all
I do.
have that, but to me, it was always the same thing. I did my, I know I used way too many sports analogies when I taught, but it's because to me, it was like a sport. Theater was a team sport. And after the basketball game, you'd get together for pizza and you talk about you passed it to me there and I had a chance to do this, but then the guy came and I had to get, and everything is so alive. And you do this with theater. It happened. And with improv, you multiply that by 10 because of
Yes.
making it all up. And you go, you said that, and I want to do that. I saw that, and you're right. You know, that kind of stuff. It's so fun. And yeah, it makes sense that you never have the excitement that you have when you're discovering this stuff, but
Right.
I still think that you're doing the thing that keeps it, that excitement alive, if it can be kept alive.
I am, and it's taken me a long time to be grateful for my situation because my ego had other plans, and but it turns out this is exactly a great place to be. Yeah, I get to do a lot of it.
Yeah.
Actually, it's all I do. Sometimes it's 7 days a week. It's teaching, performing, coaching, all that, it's pretty great.
See, that's anything. Think of a baseball player. You get to play a game for a living, and the reality of it is every day down to the park, play the game, go home, get up, get down there, do your exercises. You're done, get on a plane, go to another place. They must just hope and pray for the end of the season and go, I don't even want to make the playoffs. I don't want another game. And it's hard to keep the original fun, to keep
Yeah.
that sense of play. And again, I come back to improv because that's what it is. It's, you know, a play is a play, and it's called a play, probably for the same reason, but improv really is playing up there. And yeah, it can get old, but you have the opportunity and the potential to discover something new every night. And that's
Which
it for me.
is where I am right now, discovering something new. It's where I am with improv today is wild. It almost reminds me of what you were talking about, these living theater people. I'm this close to getting naked on stage. This must happen all the time in all art forms and everything, where it's just it goes in circles, right? Where, okay, now we've got to shake this off and like do something even newer and, not crazier, but just I want to feel more. I want to feel more. The Herald isn't enough. Schwarform isn't enough. And but it's been really exciting. It's been really exciting to kind of, it is changing. I mean, it's always changing, but I feel like I'm right now, there's a pocket of change for improvisation, and it's really exciting, and it's breaking a lot of the rules, and that's okay. And it just looks different, it sounds different, but I think the idea is to get back to that moment you were referring to earlier, which was that I don't know what to say next. I know that sounds so simple, Kevin, but you have to understand, we've all, I'll use myself, I've spent the last 25 years trying to say what it is I think they want me to say next. in every aspect of my life. And I end up just doing this C minus version of a performer where today I'm landing in a place where I just open my mouth and go, and it's incredible.
Wow, that's exciting. Because yeah, that's it. And I understand why it would be hard, especially you go into audition and you're trying to second guess them and you're trying to go, what do they want? How can I do that? And how can you possibly just let it go and surprise yourself and them with what comes out? Because it could be wrong. It could be too much. It could be too big. It could be
Sure.
too little.
Kevin, when we talk about letting it go, I feel like that's so easy to say, right? And then furthermore, and I wonder how much you had to deal with this with your students. They were mostly younger for the most part, your students, than mine. But I realize a lot of the blocking that's occurring with some of these students in order to let go is like much deeper than I can fit. It's psychological, it's self-worth issues, and like it's a lot in there. It's not just a matter of like, okay, don't think anymore. It's the ego, it's not wanting to get it wrong. There's so much packed in a person. It's
It's really, I mean, theater teachers ought to have some sort of a license. It's
exactly.
just tampering with these fragile human beings, and I mean, it's exciting because there's always somebody new and always some different kind of thing, and but it's also scary. Sometimes you go, okay, you don't let go anymore. You need to rein it in. You need to control some of these things.
Kevin, do you think that, because this is said a lot, and especially at like corporate improv stuff, do you feel like some of the rules of improvisation have entered your actual day-to-day life? Do you remember to listen more? Do you yes and people, or is that kind of hoopla?
Okay. I feel like they haven't entered my real life enough. The and it's partly because I haven't performed in so long, because when I first started my improv groups, I performed with them and it was a blast. And then I, for various reasons, mainly I needed to kind of be the person with the lariat lassoing everybody and making sure that we didn't, get kicked out of a school or a place, because you're dealing with 18-year-olds all the time and you never know what the hell they're going to do. So I had to change my role and be the like taller. But I think the thing that's neat is I run into people or even get emails out of the blue from old students, sometimes just who took an acting class where we did a little improv, and they go, assume competence has just been the hallmark of my life, or something from improv. One of the rules has meant so much to them. And I go, wow, that's very humbling. I wish I assumed confidence more in real life. How come I don't do what I preached all those years? And I think it's a matter of personality and a matter of you just wear a different hat, but sure, those I think that's the biggest thing, is people realize that they can use a lot of this stuff. Get the focus off you. Listening is something that's actually something that when I go back and do improv, the few times I have recently, I'm terrible at listening, but I'm pretty good in real life at just listening to people, partly because I like to know what they have to say. I'm interested in what makes people tick, so I want to hear them. And it's too easy to flip the switch and be on stage and go, I gotta say or do something funny here. and not to listen at all. And they
Of
go,
course.
"Oh, what did you say? You said something here right before, and I didn't catch it."
Well,
But
I've been saying lately that every now and then I'll do a focused workshop, like this one's listening or this one's whatever. But my most
I
recent
love
listening.
seeing the topics of your workshop. Just that alone is so entertaining to me.
Oh, good,
Well, wow,
good.
that's a good thing to cover. I never, why would I ever do it?
One thing I was saying in my most recent listening workshop, which I call line by line, is I've been doing a really good job pretending like I'm listening for a lot of years.
Yeah.
Like I, because I get the gist, I understand what's coming my way, but I'm also thinking about how to pay this off and this callback and plant this seed. And it's very easy to get by pretending like you're listening, but when you have to, when you're reinforced, especially in a workshop, to really just heat, back and forth, it's pretty incredible. And
Yeah.
goes back to that moment that we love so much, which is just like, I don't know what I'm going to say next because I've just been so focused on this person. It's such a beautiful, beautiful experience. And for a long time, Kevin, I don't know, I had to deconstruct all of this work for myself. And thank goodness I had some students who were willing to go on this ride with me. But for a while there during the pandemic, I was like, I think all improv should be very dramatic. And I have since come out of that, but I needed to go through that phase to slow it down, to shut up, listen, respond, and repeat. Something as simple as that, I needed to do that for myself. And it's been so beneficial. I'm so glad that I worked that muscle out. And also, by the way, I've also learned, sorry, every 6 weeks, I think I've have my new philosophy that I stand by for life. I go, this is it.
Yeah.
This is the way it should be done. And then that changes. But anywho, I went through that phase where I had to slow it down, but I'm coming out of it now, which is nice.
Means you're moving forward. That's, and what you're talking about is the Sanford Meisner repeat exercise, just moved into improv. It's
Exactly.
that's why it's so popular for acting students, because just because you know the lines and you know from doing scripted stuff. It's awfully tempting to just go, okay, I'm just waiting for this guy to finish what he has to say, and then I will click into gear here instead of going, okay, I got to hear this for the first time as if I've never heard this Jeff say these things before. And it's the problem that every actor has to really. Well, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
You've done improv so much now. Do you get to a point where you're on stage and you're in the middle of something, you go, oh, this is this scene or this is that scene?
Absolutely.
Been down this path many, many times, this path. And I would think that would be really tough because you go, I know how this comes out, instead of, put the mask on your on and the paper bag over your head and go, it still could go anywhere.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. Like, I made up a number a couple months ago. I said, there's only 36 improv scenes. So that's just, it's an arbitrary number, but just like, it's the first date. It's the sitting on an airplane. It's the this. It's the that. Like, there's only 36 improv scenes, which is so weird. Which is so, that's a whole different topic. But it's like, we tell these people you can make up whatever you want to make up and be whoever you want to be, and yet they're still doing the same scenes over and over and over and over. You go, that's crazy. If I went to the Amazon and had these jungle people, like, would they also do a first date scene, a Tinder scene? But yes, I find myself in those situations, especially with students. This is my favorite, Kevin, is two students are doing something and then I know where they're going. I go, hey, let's hold up for a sec. And one of the students looks at me like, what are you doing? I'm in the middle of a scene. I said, no, I know. I know where this goes. No, let me do it. Okay, continue. And sure enough, it goes right to that spot that I knew it was gonna get into, and there's this big lull because they're not being present. I see it all the time. So like tonight I have like a secret class, and I'm not I don't know if I should be talking about it because it's but I'm doing this thing with some students where I'm putting I don't want to see one of the 36 scenes. I don't even know if I want to see an actual scene. I want to see that beginner's mind. I want to see babies again. I want to see you discovering your fingers and your sound. You know what I mean? I'm going there with them, and I'm putting some classical music stuff, Kevin. We're just like moving around the space and doing that. And then, by the way, once we're in that space, I remove the music. I go, let's use where we are. Show me a scene. Those scenes are unlike any scene you've ever seen before in your whole life. You know, they're one is leaving on a rocket ship, and I don't know. It's just they're or it's two crabs at the bottom of the ocean in the middle of this crazy custody battle. You know what I mean?
Yes, always a good scene when you have two crabs in the custody battle.
it's geez, now I'm just going off. It's what you're saying though. I've seen all the scenes.
Yeah,
You
and
know, remember spatula? Remember how that was the thing? Remember
spatula.
people would give that as a, you'd ask for an everyday object, they'd say spatula a lot. Like
Yeah.
that's still a thing. And it's like, how is that possible?
Yeah. It takes a lot of guile, I think, to get the audience to give you a suggestion that you haven't heard over and over to the point of nausea. And I don't know what that says about people's minds or whatever, but you have to trick them into giving you a truly original suggestion. And it's
Yeah.
partly how you phrase the question you give them or the invitation. But yeah, they're going to give you a spatula. They're going to give us an emotion, and you're going to get lust, and give us an activity, and you're going to get sex, and they're all going to titter at each other and poke each other in the ribs because they're so funny. But of course, I found I do that too. I don't give those suggestions, but in
Same
certain
thing.
situations.
But it's weird, Kevin, to be on stage in a Disneyland scene again and go having flashbacks to when I was 19 years old, going, am I going to do the same churro line that Jeff Whiteman did? You know what I mean? All these years later, all these years later.
Why not?
Why not?
And yeah, I mean, that's improv. You got the one side where it's just so fresh and new and different and all that, and then you go, it's the same fresh and new and different, and you go, what? How do we get out of this rut?
I don't want to keep you too much longer. Just a couple more things. I'm thinking about this just right now because I just want to make sure it's on record. GIPS, GIPS. What does that stand for?
Generic improvisational peep show.
And what can you just tell us a little bit about what that
Where did
is?
that come from? Well, generic things were real popular in 1985 when we started. You go and get generic spaghetti, generic.
Yeah.
I don't know who made these things, but there would be generic and it would be cheaper. And so we threw generic in there, and peep show came from the when I first did my first improv show, I had to come up with a title. We were supposed to come up with a title for the whole evening, and that included my improv piece plus everybody else's avant-garde or alternative pieces. So I submitted the Burpees, Seedy Theatricals, and Peep Show, and that became the name of it. And at Denison, I used Burpees, Seedy Theatricals as the name of that group, and at Cerritos, I hadn't used Peep Show, so just tacked it on to the end of that and go, what the heck? You guys kind of made it into Gyps. Because and did the acronym thing, whereas before it had always been, we had to say it out loud here.
You know, I'm really thankful for the gyps. Obviously, we've spent an hour talking about why I'm thankful for you and Cerritos College, but though I might not have had a lot of things in common with people I ended up meeting in Chicago or or even now, whatever, you know, back then we were younger, so people were mainly coming from wherever college they were at. They were usually from the Northeast, just really cool, smart people doing cool, smart things. All of their colleges had a short form team, and they all had, you know, a silly name. And I felt so thankful that though I didn't have that degree or there was no Ivy on our campus, that I had that. I also had a short form college troop. It's the thing. Everyone rolls their eyes because we all have them. But what they don't understand is how lucky I feel to have had that, because we didn't have a lot of stuff that they had. And so I'm always so thankful that we had that training foundation opportunity and just kind of this I could I don't know, relate with everybody else. It's really cool. I can't believe that happened to us. I can't believe you did that.
Well, that's good. That's great. I still remember the kids from Denison going off, and after I was gone from Ohio, getting calls for them. And they were at Second City. There was three of them that were at Second City, and they were going, they're really impressed with us because we know all the rules already. And I was excited because I didn't know if my rules were the same as anybody else's rules. You know, I just made them up as I went along, just trying to figure out, well, how do you, because we would go, how come this scene worked this time and it didn't work another time? And you had to analyze, and the rules came out of, they weren't rules, they were just guidelines for maximizing your chances for success. But it turns out that that's, everybody's discovered that
I
it's
mean, you look at the popularity of UCB. I mean, talk about rules for maximizing success. I mean, they have an entire formula for funny there. You know, it's very structured. You don't have a lot of freedom. And I don't mean that in a bad, they want the funny. They want the product funny. And to be honest, those shows are typically funnier than most shows in the city because they are stricter on that. You know, you give them that room, and then all of a sudden it can go anywhere. Again, I won't keep it too much longer. There was a moment where I don't know if it was a sabbatical necessarily, but you did see some improv. I think you went to Chicago or you saw some stuff. What I'm trying to get to is like the latest iteration of improv you had seen or you've seen even recently. Like, were there changes you were happy about, changes you didn't like? Were you excited that it was, I don't know, just what are your thoughts about the future of it and things that you've seen since you've stopped teaching?
I'll at the last Burpees reunion, the 40th reunion of Burpees, Steve Carell told me you should write an improv book. And my response was, Steve, I'm a dinosaur now. I'm the kind of improv that I championed and that I thought was exciting and fun is people don't do that. I don't see that anywhere. The most recent that I've seen it was going to London at a place called the Comedy Store, which is not like our comedy store, but they called it the Comedy Store. And they had an improv group that was mostly from the original Whose Line Is It Anyway, the British version.
Wow.
There were enough, so they rotated cast, but and I went and saw them three times, and then I went back another year and saw them three more times, and they were doing short form better than anybody I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
It's just really, really funny. And then that's when it really hit me that this is, you don't see this anymore. You don't, even comedy sports and stuff like that. I have trouble with it. So I feel like improv has passed me by. I mean, I really do. I love doing what I did, but I long form, I still just really disagree with because I think when you were at Cerritos, we did some long form things.
Sure.
We did it more in the early days of Cerritos, probably. But to me, it's all improv. But to exclusively depend on that, I've seen some great Harolds, some Harolds that I thought, how did they do that? The same thing that I thought early on that got me interested. But most of the time, I see long form improv, I'm just bored. I go, this is, and I find that they don't care about the audience. They get a suggestion and then they never use the suggestion. And it's almost like they're doing it for themselves. And to me, this bothers me. It's not, because if there's one thing I would keep coming back to, it's the audience. You do it for them. You show them that you're making it up. Because I would see groups. There was a group called Off the Wall that played in Hollywood, and a group called The Proposition that toured. They were from Boston, but they toured the country. And you go see them one night, and you go, "Wow, that's great!" And they would do the whole thing with a musical, and the suggestion was McDonald's, and it was a great big hamburger in the sky, and they're doing a big production number. And then the next night, it was Campbell's soup and the great big chicken noodle in the
Oh
sky.
my
And you go, they did the same thing.
Wow.
They just filled in the blanks. And you go, no, you show the audience. I mean, you go off on and say, I know they're making it up. I can tell they're making it up. They're really doing improv, but the audience, you get a different reaction from the audience if they think you're in trouble, if they see that you couldn't possibly have prepared for this moment. It's why when people crack up on stage, the audience laughs because they go, oh, he just broke character. He's ha-ha, this is funny. I've seen something that other people haven't seen. But and it's why whenever you go home to talk about an improv show, it's very unfulfilling because really you had to be there, and that's what you wind up saying. Anyway, that's a
Well,
long-winded way of saying that's how I feel now. Is I really feel like my improv is gone.
I do want to say, as somebody who's in it, like I am, I think that long form is going away. I think
Really?
that, yeah, I think not long form as a way to do improv, but the kind of boring 30 minutes based on one word stuff, I don't want to see it anymore, to be
Yeah.
honest. I don't want to do it anymore. It's changing, and a big part of that change, and I promise you we are wrapping up because this is a whole 3 more hours, but is, I don't know if you've heard me mention this, whatever, but I've gotten into clown a lot.
Yeah, oh, that's yeah, that is exciting.
And a lot of people in LA have, and it's affecting the way performances of all kinds are being done in the city. And it really takes into account how the audience is feeling. You
Yeah.
know, I mean, as a matter of fact, there's no, if we drop that fourth wall and clown and really connect and, you know, fail with them and in front of them and stuff. But what I'm saying is the work I want to do now is coming back to short form. It's what you said. It's, I want to put myself in a situation where I'm in trouble again. But it's taken me so many years to get here again, Kevin, because again, the idea was you told me to go to Chicago. Then I was going to go to be in the main stage at Second City. Then I was going to go to Saturday Night Live and then be a movie star. And then I'll never do this podcast with you. But it didn't happen that way for a number of reasons. But I didn't help myself because I was white knuckling it for years, trying to get it right, not trying to put myself in trouble. I've been saying this lately, Kevin, that a lot of the teams that are a little bit older that we thought were so good, are good. They would come out and they do something like this. Hey, we're going to do improv right now, but it's going to be so good and so seamless. It's going to look scripted. This is how good we are. There won't be a moment where you're worried because we don't want our audience to be worried. And so then what happens is you get people who've never seen improv, they go, that might as well have been scripted. And what I'm saying now is I want to go in front of the audience and say, hi, I'm going to fall down. And I hope on the way, maybe I can catch myself or maybe I can make something of it. But the truth is you're going to see the cracks. You're going to see the falls. I'm going to remind you that I'm making this up. And that's where I've landed today, Kevin, which is what the hell we were doing back then with all the forms you created, all the stuff, which is right now we're going to get you in much trouble as possible. Go.
And you keep proving it to them by taking their suggestion and re-putting it in at just building the whole thing on their suggestion instead of going, well, you came up with spatula and we mentioned spatula at some point in those 30 minutes, it counts.
It counts.
But no, that's great. And I like the clowning thing. When I found
Oof.
out you were doing that, it's like, yeah, because that I wanted to be a clown when I was younger too. And but it's a performance. See, clown takes you into the level of performance. And people would talk to actors and go, "You're a performer," which meant bad, which meant you were over the top. We could see that you were acting. And I've always thought that that's wrong. There's good things about performance. The audience wants to see a show. They know at the bottom of everything. That's the part of the willing suspension of disbelief is you go, we know this is not real. Yes. But there is a place for that. And so I applaud you. I think that's going to be interesting to see where it all goes. But you're in a position where you can influence it going there. So that's great.
At the very least, I don't care what they want anymore, you know? And that's true. That's from the bottom of my heart.
That's nirvana right there.
It's Nirvana. Thank you for doing this. I try not to get too emotional during this thing, but it's just worth repeating how important you are to me, how just your faith and belief in me and your guidance and conversations in your office and all of it meant so much to me and means so much to me. And you gave me a journal when I moved to Chicago to write, and you put a little cash in there, which was very sweet, you and Georgia Well. And I just really thank you. And I just really love you.
That's very nice. I really appreciate that. And I still say what I said when I wrote that stuff about you. You're the best improv student that I've had. I mean, you talk about surprising. You were always surprising on stage. And at that moment when I would panic and go, "We need something funny here real soon," I could look at you and you would go out and you would do it. So you say, "I'm not funny, but I've seen you be funny, and I've seen you do it at the drop of a hat, and I've seen you zip yourself out of one character and emerge into another character and totally, just blow everyone away."
But
So
thank you. Thank you. And thank you for doing this.
it's my pleasure, believe me.